Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone here to the second session this afternoon. My name is Graham Newmuch. I'm from Pennania Anglican, and I'd like to welcome Bruce Chan. And I came across Bruce in one of the stalls outside, actually, and so he might tell you a bit more about that later. And so he's doing lots of things here today. Bruce, I'd just like to ask you a couple of questions so that people can sort of get to know you a bit better. And first of all, Bruce, would you like to tell us a bit about your work?
Yeah, sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Bruce, obviously. I work for an organisation called BCS Life Care Relationship Services. My main role is as a men and family relationship counsellor. So Monday to Friday, I work in individual counselling and relationship counselling. Plus, I do a whole range of different groups to do with families, but my main role is working with men, whether it's young men in high schools or it's older men's groups for parenting, not only parenting, plus also relationship issues.
Great. Well, that must take you a lot of time, Bruce. Now, what do you do when you're not working with life care, and what sort of some interests you've got?
Probably one of my biggest interests is the modern generation probably call it internet gaming, but you'll probably just know it as playing chess online. That's one of my little personal foibles. I don't like to play the new games. I'm not into Xbox or Wii or PlayStation. I like the old board game, chess. It does everything for me. So it's my outlet. It's my stress relief from work when it is stressful, when I'm dealing with really heavy topics that clients have been telling me about or I'm working with. Stress is my little outlet.
Great, thanks. Now, we've all heard about Gen X, Y, and then today we're going to hear about Gen Z. We're getting a long way down the track there. Bruce, what sort of family have you got and brings your expertise in this?
Yeah, there was a fellow that came out to our stall and he was chatting to me and he said, "Oh, are you married?" And I'm like, "Yes, I am," because he sort of noticed that I wasn't wearing a wedding ring. The reason why, I sort of lost that in the surf. I've been married to my wife, Karen, for 12 years. I lost my ring and she lost her engagement ring, her wedding band, and her second wedding band, all at various times in our marriage. Thankfully, it's not about our rings that keep us married, so that's kind of a good thing. One of the questions most people probably want to ask or might be thinking, how many kids do I have and how successful as a dad I am? To blow it straight out of the water from the very beginning, because this is a very different kind of a discussion group, I actually don't have kids of my own. I'm not a father of my own biological kids, but at the same time, just like many of us here, all of us here, we are all fathers. So I still see myself as a father, as a male role model, as a father figure to my godkids, my nephews who are 3 and 1 month, or 1 month old, and all the kids in my church with my friends as well. All their kids always are looking up to me, not only me, but each of you guys. And that's what we're going to sort of hopefully unpack a little bit more today.
Okay, well, let's open the afternoon in prayer. Dear Lord, we do thank you for this opportunity to learn a bit more about how we can relate to the younger generations. And Lord, we thank you for Bruce and all that he brings to this. And we just ask that you would help us to learn some great things this afternoon and to be able to take away some great tools to use in our lives. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Graham. All right, gentlemen, you've made it to almost the tail end of the day. I appreciate you being here. I had no idea how many would be in the room, whether it's going to be 3 or this many, so I'm very thankful. Hopefully, at the end of a really full day with lots of great talks and speakers, I'll be able to keep your energy somehow. Just to give you a quick plan, I'm not planning to talk for the whole time. There will be a significant chunk of time at the end just for open questions. I'll get you to do some activities as well, but they're not going to be too painful, so I promise you that. I'm going to keep my main points very simple. I don't have PowerPoint. I don't have butcher's paper. Hopefully what I talk about will actually make sense to you because it will make sense to you because it's valuable for you. Now, as I look around the room, I appreciate that we've got guys of all ages, guys that are probably younger than me, I'm sure, and guys who I would be looking up to as role models if I were in your church. I'm sure there are guys here who might not be fathers yet, but one day you might be. And I'm glad that you're here, because that's a huge thing that you're doing, because you're doing a lot of preparation that is really important, just like all the things that I've learnt in my role working with dads, I get to glean a lot of great knowledge and wisdom that one day I will use with my own children, hopefully, God willing. Plus also that I use every day when I am with children, youth, whatever age they might be. For you dads who have got adult kids, adult children, men, grown men who might have kids of their own, you might be grandfathers, you might be uncles, you might be pops, whatever your particular role in the lives of the children around you, hopefully today we'll just point you back to what, I guess, our role as godly men requires and asks of us. Because it's not just parenting today. It's not about parenting. It's about relationship. And it's like what Peter was saying this morning. It's about our relationship with God and how that flows through our relationships with the children in our lives, both boys and girls. So I guess that's kind of the main point that I'll be hitting home a bit more and more. Firstly, just to, I guess, unpack the whole Generation Z thing. There's the baby boomers. There's Gen X, which most of you are in. There's baby boomers here. There's Gen Y, which is being described as a question, the generation who just ask why. Why this, why that. Then there's Generation Z, and apparently, I had to do a bit of research myself, Generation Z kind of encompasses anyone born post 2000. So they're probably all still 11 years and under. Then there's also Gen C, I found when I was looking at my sort of research. Gen C is a completely non-age group generation. It's the generation that we're a part of because of the modern technological era. And that has a lot to do with the modern generation. So whether it's Gen X, Y, Z, coming around to A again or whatever it is, it's how do we parent, how do we relate as fathers, as men, in this current climate, which we might be very familiar with. Some of the younger guys are really into Facebook and Twitter and SMS and all that kind of thing. I haven't got my head around all of that. Some of you might be computer literate. Some of you might not even be able to work out how to log in to your email and send emails to your grandkids. That's fine. It's not about using the current media only. It's still about old-fashioned relationship. So what I might get you to do, this is the first activity. This will keep you awake for the rest of the afternoon, hopefully through this sort of presentation. What I want you to do is just turn to a person next to you, groups of two or three. What I want you to do is just introduce yourself by name. Let the other person know a little bit about the children in your life. But the main question I want you to share with the other person is thinking back to when you were a child, when you were a young boy. Thinking back in relationship to your own father. In a room this size, some of us might have had fathers when we were kids, some of us might not have for different reasons. But think about someone in your childhood who you would consider your father, if not your own, and share with the person just a memory or two that stood out for you. I'm not going to define what that is. I'm going to let you choose that. So have you got that? Yep. I'll give you about a minute or two just to say hi to the next person and just share something about... It's great to hear so much healthy discussion and conversation all around the room. Now, just a few responses maybe, if you want to just yell them out. What was that like to sort of talk to another person, another guy, about your own childhood, your relationship with your own father?
It was good.
It was easy? It was good? Yeah? Okay, so if you had a good relationship with your father, it was probably easy too. Did anyone find it different?
Yeah, I found it hard, and the interesting thing is I was looking for a good thing to say, and I thought, oh, why am I looking for a... Because you didn't actually say, you said share a memory, and I thought, I wanted to share a good memory. It took me a while to find one. But I was like, why did I look in the first place? Why not just share a bad memory? And I didn't want that.
Okay. So sometimes it's hard to think of a good memory. Did anyone else have that kind of experience or hear someone else sharing to them that sort of experience? Yep. Yeah. Oh, there's a few hands up. No, stay here. We want you here. It's not uncommon. In a room this size, and not only this room, but many other men's talks that I've presented talking about this particular topic, it's not often easy when we think back to our own childhoods. When we think back to our own fathers, not only as kids, but possibly even now. and I'm no different. It's not easy to think back and always think of the most positive memory, the time when Dad said how much he loves you, or how proud he is of you, or how well done. Probably one of the only times, the night before I got married. Other ones where it's been quite positive in my memory, I really have to search. But there's times that come really quickly when he's put down a harsh word, says, "Why don't you get out of the car and help me?" I'm 11 years old, it's dark, it's late, I'm in Cabramatta. Enough said. It's that kind of memory that usually comes first. It's the critical ones, or the ones where it's been a bit harsh, or, you know, "Oh, it's great that you got whatever percent, but next time you can do harder, you could probably get 100. Or why don't you try harder like so-and-so? So when we think of our own fathers, we have different memories. They're not always pleasant. Sometimes we have to search for them. Sometimes not easy to talk to other people about it. But why I got you to do that activity and put yourself in the position when you were a child is we're thinking about how we relate to kids in this generation. It's no different. So regardless of the technology, regardless of the internet and Facebook and all those kind of things that kids are so into these days, or whether they just want to use our iPhones if you've got one, which I don't have a smartphone, or whatever system you're using, an Android, etc., it's not about the vehicle or the medium of how we relate. Because when you think about it, it didn't matter back then. It was just the relationship we wanted. Did time come up in any of your conversations? Yeah? Did absence of Dad come up in any of your conversations? Or when he actually did initiate something and take you out, or he took you to a certain place and you still remember that day, even till now? Those things have not changed. Even though the world has, and sometimes we find ourselves feeling like foreigners in this modern world, it's no different when we're talking about relationship with our children. So just keep that in mind, because I think that helps ground us. So it doesn't matter how old we are, what stage we're at, what cultural background we are, what family culture we're from. Relationship is the core of it. That's what kids relate to. They want your time. You are their father. You will never stop being their father. You might have made some mistakes in the past. Maybe that's why you're here. I don't know. You might just want to be a better father. That's okay too. But you're all here, and we're all here learning and hearing from each other. But don't think it's about what I've got to tell you, because I'm no expert. I'm still learning. And I had chats during the lunch break with dads of adult children. They're still learning. It's different parenting a six-year-old, which just needs your affection and time. It's nice and easy. Feed them, clothe them, put them to bed, play with them. It's nice and easy. But what do you do with a 36-year-old son? I don't think my dad's really got that much more of an idea now. My dad's father passed away when he was, I think, 23. So I was 4 when my grandfather passed away. Technically, my dad grew up without a dad as an adult male. He's now having to relate to me, and I'm wondering, why doesn't he ever call me? Why doesn't he ever initiate to come over for dinner or anything? Why do I feel like I'm the one doing all of the work? Partly could be his experience, maybe his role modeling. Maybe he doesn't have a model. He doesn't have a roadmap. As blokes, we don't use manuals. We don't read instruction books. We buy the thing, plug it in, turn it on, go. We buy the car, we just go. If we wanted an instruction book, most dads probably tell me, parenting would probably be one that I would actually flick through. Unfortunately, there's not one for this subject. That's why we have to relate and sort of rely on each other's experiences. And just be open to the fact that as guys, we're not always going to get it right, as much as we want to be, as much as we think that we could. So, in the bigger picture of things, parenting, being a father, being a husband, raising kids on your own if you're a single dad, raising kids with your wife or your partner, it's tough. We need support just as much as everyone else. So I'm glad that you've filled the room for me, because it says how important it is as men of God particularly. We can't shirk this responsibility. It's easy to say, okay, well, non-Christians sort of can, and sometimes we fall into the same patterns. But as men of God, as Christians, as people who see the perfect relationship between God and man through Christ, I think we have a much bigger responsibility. So this is not an easy workshop or discussion group to attend because you're not off the hook. This is not just easy, nice and soft, go home, give my kid a hug, it's all good. This is not. This is a big responsibility that we all have. Not just to our own children, but to other children as well. Because kids are watching us, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. But what we do want to look at, I guess, is what does the Bible say? I'm not a scholar. I'm no Peter Jensen. I'm no Phil Jensen. I'm no main keynote speaker. But a simple, familiar verse that most of us know or are familiar with, Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. It's jammed between kids, don't grieve your parents, wives, look after your husbands, husbands, look after your wives. It's squeezed in there, and it's one verse. There's not a lot of unpacking in it, so it seems, all right, pretty much, excuse my French, don't piss off my kids, and teach them and instruct them. Pretty simple. Got it. I'll do it. Put that aside. They're shaking heads. It's not that easy. There's a lot in that one verse. There is a lot in that one verse. The first part says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. What does that mean? Some of the things you were just sharing in your pairs or in your, you know, with the people next to you, you heard some of those things. You know what it's like to be on the receiving end as a child, as a boy, to be exasperated by your father. Dad promises something, he didn't follow through. Dad said something that cut, that hurt, and it's still in your head all these years later, fresh as the day that it happened. They're just some examples of what it is to exasperate your children or to be exasperated by your father. We all know what that's like, unfortunately, because we do live in a broken world. Our fathers are not perfect. None of them are. Only our Heavenly Father is. Now, I'm not going to unpack the whole exasperating your children. There's plenty of literature out there. There's references to two books on the scribble page. So you can look at Disciplines of a Godly Man, books like Point Man as well. They've got great chapters on stuff that I'm talking about today that I've sort of borrowed from or sort of have pieced together from anecdotal stuff. You can search that stuff, but it's about thinking personally, what am I doing? What are you doing that could be exasperating your children? How does that bring you and the children in your life closer together? Or how does that keep you at the same distance? Or most importantly, how does that actually pull you further apart? The thing that I guess we're here because we don't want to do. We want to relate. We want to connect with the children in our lives. We want to be better fathers. It's not about feeling shame or guilt for what we may have done or what we will do in the future because, you know, you're gonna mess it up. How many of you can think of, you don't have to raise your hand, you don't have to answer out loud, but how many times can you remember your father saying sorry to you? Probably not too many times. I can't recall one time. But I know that there's been plenty of times when I've waited for a sorry or thought that I deserved a sorry. There's plenty of times I've had to say sorry. Fathers don't tend to apologize, admit responsibility sometimes, show that they're wrong, have a bit of a sense of humor, whether you laugh it off or just actually have a heart-to-heart. Whatever it is that works for you, you don't have to be all soft and fuzzy and be talking about feelings like a counselor like myself. You might be old school father, but still at the same time, you need to acknowledge because those things model to your children, to kids, how to be a man for your boys, plus what a man should be or look or can look like to your girls. Because one day they'll be looking for a partner, your girls, your daughters. So they'll be looking towards the example that you've set. And the same for the boys in your lives when they become young men or men. So keep those things in mind. Also, we have to consider the impact that exasperation has on us, even as men today. It informs and directs the way that we parent. I'm sure it does. We would do the things that we liked, that worked, and we mimic them. We do the same. Unfortunately, sometimes we can do the same things that don't work, that don't actually bring us closer, but that sort of keep us at this arm's distance or actually break down relationship. Your children are only children for a certain amount of time. Kids are only kids for a limited time. I heard that from a group of dads I was talking to on Wednesday night. You know, one father made that observation, and all the other guys in the room sort of just stopped and were like, oh yeah, that's kind of obvious. But fathering and, you know, fatherhood does not just stop when your kids reach high school, get to year 12, become 18, become young men, make decisions for themselves, move out of house. They don't stop becoming your kids. There's still the rest of their life or the rest of your life. So it's really important to know that there is impact on our actions and our words on our children. But the upside is, it's not permanent. So we can always change, we can always adapt. Just like Christ gives us grace and mercy, we can always do things differently. So there's plenty of room to do that. So not all hope is lost if your kids are 16 or they're 37 or they're 2 and you've sort of haven't done things the way you want. It's never too late. Relationship can always be remade with your children. The other part, I guess, is it's important for this particular generation, and I will touch a little bit on, I guess, the media and the impact that has. Technology really is, we're like bombarded. Not only us, but our kids, they're bombarded by so many different messages out there that can sort of be different to what we're trying to give them at home, what we're trying to teach them in church, what we're trying to teach them from the Word. There's so much confusion. And so they will need some sort of anchor or direction. And that's going to come from mum and dad. Mum and dad. Not just mum, for how to relate, how to talk, how to care for others, how to be friends and all those sorts of things. But they will want to know from you. Whether you're doing it or not, whether you're actively doing it or not, you are already doing it. So keep that in mind. That is a part of the challenge that we face as men. The modern generation of boys, and I'm just going to talk about boys particularly just for a moment, a lot of boys are growing up without dads. In a room this size, it's no different. Some of us didn't have dads, or our dads separated from our mums. That is a huge factor, because kids are looking for role models in the media, in music, on television, in any other particular area or medium. And you can imagine what they're getting out there, the examples of masculinity. It should be this, it should be that. I'm not even going to name them or sort of put anyone to shame out there in terms of who is in the public eye, but we know the examples. Think about which ones are worthwhile for your kids to be looking up to, your boys to be modeling as men for when they grow up. I work with a lot of relationships. Unfortunately, when you do that, I work with a lot of domestic violence. I work with a lot of guys who, for whatever reason, are abusive or violent to their partners. Not only secular, but also Christian men. No different. It does not exclude our Christian community. Yet we have a bigger calling. We have a bigger responsibility. So why is this happening? Just because we have faith and we have grace and we have forgiveness, it doesn't mean that we're acting on it. So we need to be consistent with our faith, our belief. And that's where the exasperating your kids comes into play. It's not just, oh, okay, great. I come to a day workshop. I come to a conference. I go to church on Sunday. I serve. I'm on the diaconate. I'm an elder. I'm a preacher, etc. We must be living these things. This is not just about ticking the box, done, I'm good, do something different at home. Because your kids have two eyes and two ears, and they're watching everything that you do and listening to everything that you say. So you might say, don't do this and do all the good stuff, but your actions are the ones that they remember. They're the ones that you remember from your own father, that I remember from my father. It's easy to use lots of excuses that it's hard to connect. We have to work hard. Yes, you know, times aren't easy. We do have to work long shifts to make ends meet. We do have to look after all of the bills and the mortgage and all the expenses and extracurricular stuff and soccer on Saturday, all those sorts of things. It takes time. Okay, you've got time to do all those things. How much time are we spending with our children? That's the other part. Now, it's important because what our kids face, you might be aware of. What our kids face, some of us might not be aware of yet, or might not even know how to approach that particular topic. There's stuff that your kids are learning that I've heard in conferences that I hear with kids or adults that I work with. Kids are growing up a lot faster these days than probably when we were. We'd be riding the bikes in the street till sunset. You know, you could come home at dinner time and you'd be safe. Our kids can't do that anymore. Our kids are exposed because of media, because of the internet. It's not to blame or demonize the internet. The internet is not necessarily good or bad. It's how you use it or how you filter it or what kids are exposed to on it. But we have to keep those things in mind. We can't shy away from those hard conversations that maybe our dads didn't have with us, not just on the topic of sex, but these days, and this is to be blatant, it's not just about sex, but it's about pornography and the impact that sexualization in the media of our kids is playing. We have to be ready and equipped to have these discussions with our kids, to teach them what's appropriate, not have to hit them with gratuitousness in how we come across that, but just to help them to be critical on what is going on around them. Because they will look towards you, and if they don't find those answers, you know, they might feel, I can't talk to Dad, I want to talk to Mum. Where is Dad? He's there, but he's absent. He's not able to sort of connect with me. You don't want to foster that resentment that can easily lead, and that's one of the parts of, I guess, exasperating your children. You've got to be there when they need you, not just when it fits with your timetable or your energy levels. We need to sort of think bigger. We need to create that time. Now, why is time so important? I guess the second part of Ephesians 6:4, instead, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. So in this one verse, there's two major factors there. Training and instruction. So training, quite simply, when I was thinking about it, it means leadership, modeling, correcting. Training is the practical things on giving them ways of how to be young children, how to be teenagers, how to be adults, how to earn people's respect and not just take respect. This young generation these days, everyone feels the entitlement, I deserve respect. You don't deserve respect. You don't take respect from someone. You don't beat it into their submission verbally or physically. You earn your respect. That's how most of us learnt. You don't just respect someone because they're older, because they could wrong you. They could turn out to be the least person who deserves respect. Respect is earned. How? By watching and seeing what that person does. Does that person exasperate me in the biblical sense or not? Training is very important. Not only in how they see you as a father, but see what you do as a man. How you speak, how you act at church, in your family, how you relate to your partner, your wife. How you talk to women, how you view women, how you hang out with mates, whether it's at the footy, or whether it's at Bible study, or whether it's on picnics at church, or whatever scenario or setting you might be in. Your kids are watching every single thing that you do. That is training. Whether you're conscious of it or not, it's happening. It might be scary to sort of think, wow, that actually happens, doesn't it? Because you get young kids who start saying things after they learn to talk and they spit out the same things that you or your wife have said. And they think, whoa, where'd they get that from? They picked it up because they have two ears and two eyes. So your training is really important, and it relates to wider things. How you use alcohol, how you use your money, all of the things that are important, they're watching. They are watching and absorbing, because that's what we do. Instruction is very important as well. So instruction is where you actually have to actively, consciously instruct. You must speak to your children. You must direct them. You must have discussions. But besides just telling them and hoping that they'll listen, it's also listening to them. If you can hear your children, sometimes that's more valuable, just to be heard. Give them structure. Give them the wisdom so that they can make healthy, happy decisions. But you also have to spend time listening. Sometimes you might not know the answer. It's okay, let's go look at it together. Let's find out who we're going to go talk to. Sometimes that's really important because you're instructing them on how to learn. You're instructing them that you're learning as well. Instruction also, I guess, comes with praise. Like I was saying earlier, when I think about my dad, there's not many times where you remember the good times where he's praised you or said well done or how proud he was of you. Those are the things that you really hope for. And even at those moments when you think it's got to come now because I've just done something that stands out, it still might not get said in such words because they might think, they assume you know. But assuming that you know your dad is proud of you is different from actually hearing the words, I am proud of you, son. It's a whole different impact. It's a huge impact. So we must use our words as well as our ears with our kids. Now, very quickly, two main key things that you'll read in, like if you do look through those books, if you know someone who has Point Man or Disciplines of a Godly Man, just borrow the book. You have to buy it. I'm not one for buying books that I'm actually going to read. But just get your hands on it. Read those chapters. Let it stew in your mind. One of the things that I found, time is influence. There's all this talk about quality time. It is important. But 5 minutes is not quality time. The more time you spend with your children, the more time you spend with anyone, the more influence you're going to have. It's kind of not rocket science. If you spend more time with your kids, naturally somewhere in there will be quality time. Lots of it will be just playing games or hanging out or going to the zoo or doing regular things. But in those times, at those moments when you least expect it, there will be opportunities that you can look for and use as quality time. Listening, engaging, modeling, encouraging them, building them up. So you must spend time in order to have influence. If we want to relate to our kids, we can't expect that we're going to relate to them spending 3 minutes a day with them. Oh, you're at home watching TV together. Okay, that's great. You're sitting next to them. You're a lump next to another lump. What's happening between the two of you? What are you really hoping to get out of that? Instruction and training. We have to keep thinking about those things. Once again, consistency and faith. We must be modeling that all the time. We don't just compartmentalize our parenting, our manhood, our fatherhood, and separate that from our Christian life or our married life or our work life. All these things are in the one basket, unfortunately, whether we want them to be separate because it's easier to live with that because we work on one thing at a time. But we're men of God. We're not men of God between 1:30 and or between 1:50 and 2:40 while I'm up the front here. I'm a man of God as I'm walking down to the main hall, as I'm packing, as I'm driving home, as I'm driving here. I slip up at certain times of day, yes, but being conscious that we are constantly required to live our faith. That's a huge part of how we're going to relate to kids of this generation. That's all I really want to say. It's probably not new. It's not too eye-opening, but it is a huge challenge. And it is really important because that is what the Bible requests of us. That is what God expects of us as his obedient servants. It's not just to him. It's in the relationships around us, particularly as fathers, as uncles, as grandfathers, as men who will have kids one day, as men who are cousins, nephews, or brothers. It's all important. So this is a challenge not only for yourselves, it's a challenge for me. And it doesn't stop. It does not stop. Are there any questions? I've had done enough talking. Are there any questions?
Right. If you could just repeat the question in there, it'd be great. Thanks. Yeah.
Sure. Thanks, Graham.
It touched on a lot of things that I've grown up with. And I know in the scriptures they talk about, think about what is noble, what is just, and that sort of thing. Marcus Aurelius said that we become what we think about. And it's very hard. We've got to keep focusing on that sort of thing as a father would. We become the company you keep. If you can pass it on to your kids about that. There's one thing I learned, I'm sorry about this, that when I was a child, I was told to make sure your kids become responsible and give them money when they do something, right? But ask and tell them. At my age, a dollar was a lot of money. So I gave them $1.10. But I said, the 10 cents is going to be for your board, right? The eldest, these are primary school kids, right? She accepted that, she still got a dollar, but the youngest, she went home and went to school. She went to school and she said, she asked her mates, do you play board? No one did. But she did, she thought she'd been ripped off. But the good thing is, as they went through life, they kept on paying that board, that 10 cents, whatever, and they worked out the percentage. I didn't have to ask money for board. I'll just give you a little bit that I've learned over the years.
No, thank you. Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. It is important. Whereabouts do you live, Philip? I think you're going to have a few renters. Yeah. So the question is, if you're working from home and your work situation's changed, and your kids have more access to you and they want more time from you, but you've still got to do your work and you've got set amount of time that you can spend with them, how do you go about striking that perfect balance? Short answer. It's at what's appropriate for their age and their particular needs. So just to really give you a concentrated answer, it's about, quality time is when your kids might need it. You might acknowledge something but still state clearly what your needs are. They might still have to play on their own while you're in the room, and you can do your work and they play quietly, but it's about modelling and teaching those boundaries, even from a young age. You might have to establish some of those things. And there's great parenting programs out there, which I'll sort of mention at the very end before I finalise, but it's about thinking about those things. I can't give you a direct answer for your own children, but I would say, yeah, it's giving them what they need, and you'd be surprised they don't actually need 5 hours of your time that you're at home. They only need little snippets. It might feel like constant interruptions for a while, but you sort of give it to them, and then you sort of say, well, I have to do this. And be fair, because kids respond to consequences, as long as the instructions and reasons are clear. Yes. I'm sure there is in Ephesians. Read the surrounding chapter. Definitely, yes. But you have to find someone to unpack how not to have your children exasperate their parents. Definitely. Thank you. Yes. Yes. So the question is, I've got kids who aren't going to church, who don't have a faith, who have sort of made their own different decision. What do I do? It's a big question. I think God is sovereign, obviously. As fathers, as parents who want the best for your children, not just in this world, but in the eternal picture, continue to model. Pray for your kids. Keep the door open to the conversation. Relate to them on other ways that will build that relationship that then you can at some stage continue to introduce in sprinkles. Sprinkle regularly, kind of maybe like salt. I don't know if any of you have high blood pressure, but sprinkle regularly your relationship with God. They will see that. They will see that as different to their peer group. They will see that to different as what they see on television, hear in music, or the other messages and bombardments that they get. Keep that relationship open. That is going to be your strongest. Time is influence. Relationship is influence. And we are, as men and as fathers, signposts to God. If for our kids, plus our wives and our daughters and our everyone. But we are sign. If you think of yourself as a signpost, you'll always remember what our duty is to point back to God, not only for them but for us.